Good morning. I have stood up on this platform in front of you all before, but never in this capacity, as a teacher in between, but never as a preacher in the midst of the service. And I do want to say that there is something comforting about being up here in the midst of a liturgy, which is something I love about our liturgy, is that right after the sermon comes the Nicene Creed, in which we as a whole church get to stand up and say what it is we believe. And what I take that to mean is if the preacher just really blows it, just says something that's not even close to being Christian, we all get to stand up at the end and be like, no. You don't get that chance when I'm just teaching in between. You're like, well, I'm upset. Here we get to reaffirm our faith in just a minute. So, you know, there's a little bit of safety net in there for us. I really appreciate the chance to be able to preach this morning. We have been this summer in the middle of Mark's Gospel, and we're about to make a jump. Next week we're going to make a jump into John's Gospel. And just a little bit of framework for that. John's Gospel, we don't have a year. We don't have a season or a year of our cycle of readings in which we're just in John. John is scattered out throughout. We visit John in Epiphany. We visit John in Lent. And then we visit John in the season after Pentecost in a couple of different areas. But we don't have there's no sort of John year. And part of that is because the three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the three synoptic Gospels, are the Gospels that seem to tell the most sort of narrative version of the life and teachings of Jesus. The storyline is very closely woven together. So we are able to kind of follow Jesus through Galilee and through Jerusalem in the synoptic Gospels. John has a special place in the Christian faith, and I think it's important that he does. If you've been to a church, St. David's downtown is one, and there are others that have the lectern, usually on this side, and it's often in the shape of an eagle. Have you seen that? You've noticed it sometimes. You'll see it in church architecture. The place where you read the Bible from is shaped like an eagle. And that's the ancient church symbol for John's Gospel. And what that's really saying, one of the church fathers said that that the first fruits of all the Bible are the Gospels. And the first fruits of all the Gospels is the Gospel of John. And what that's really getting at is John is the Gospel that most of all takes us to the kind of into the depths of the Christian faith. And the Jesus of John's Gospel is really teaching, here's what it is to believe in the resurrection, here's what it is to believe in the seeds of gospel. So that's the reason that we sort of scatter John throughout. We'll be there next week. We get one more week with Mark, and there's something I've appreciated this time in Mark, because there's something that Mark does. There's a sort of urgency from Mark's Gospel that you don't get in any of the other Gospels. Today we're in chapter 6 of Mark's Gospel, and I think there are three things that we can learn from chapter 6 of Mark's Gospel. In particular, chapter 6 takes us into the psyche of the disciples. We get to know, we get to experience what it means, what it is to follow Jesus, which in Mark's Gospel is a pretty crazy undertaking. We get to feel that with the disciples in Mark 6. And Mark 6 tells us three things, I think, about what the disciples are experiencing. And the first thing that they're experiencing is being sent out by Jesus. Now, Mark's Gospel, I said that Mark's Gospel is sort of shaped by this urgency. The setup is, in the very beginning of Mark's Gospel, John the Baptist comes out proclaiming, something's about to happen. The storm is about to break. Everyone get ready. And then it says, Jesus hears in Galilee that John has been put into prison. And he starts going through the town saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The storm breaks. Chapter 1. We don't get a birth narrative. We don't get a long setup. We just get, here it comes. And from that point on, it comes. Story after story after story. The most common phrase that you get in Mark's Gospel is, and immediately. I counted 27 times Mark's Gospel says, and immediately. Because there's no pause button. And in fact, Jesus in Mark's Gospel is often trying to slow this thing down. He's telling, when he casts demons out, he's like, keep it down. And the reason that it seems, if you read along those chapters, it seems like he's really saying, we got to slow this thing down because it's going to drown us. He's going from town to town, and the other phrase that you hear alongside immediately, the other phrase you hear most of all is, and the crowds. There's crowds everywhere. They get trapped in houses, and it's like there's no shoulder room in the Gospel of Mark. You can't even, Jesus can't move from town to town, and they just keep flooding him with the crowds. They trap him in houses, they trap him on the shore. He's trying to get to one town, but he can't because this crowd is like blockading him, they're coming at him. Urgency. It's happening everywhere, and it's happening so fast that no one can really control it. Jesus in Mark's Gospel gets tired. He gets overwhelmed. He gets hungry. He gets sort of compassion fatigue. This is the presentation that Mark's Gospel gives us. And remember that we're talking here, Mark sets it up by saying, this is the Son of God. And it's the Son of God who is experiencing the kingdom, God's kingdom, in a human life form. He's not walking through and sort of, I'm going to be the omnipotent bringer of this kingdom. He's walking through as a dude who gets tired and who gets overwhelmed and who's not sure what to do when he's getting a little bit hangry and here come the crowd. This is the Jesus in Mark's Gospel. In Mark chapter 6, he shares this gift with his disciples. He says, now you go. Now you be the one who carries this kingdom out. And so the chapter opens with him carrying the kingdom out to the towns and villages of Galilee through his 12 disciples. He sends them out. And he sends them out to do extraordinary things. He sends them out to heal the sick, to go into these towns and find those who are possessed by demons and cast the demons out. He sends them out to go be trapped in towns by crowds who are going to be circling about them everywhere they go. He sends them out to do more than they're capable of doing. And the chapter opens with them going. So the first thing that we see about the disciples is that the disciples in this chapter are sent out. The second thing that we experience, and this gets us to our reading for today, is that they are cared for in that work that they do. Now, something unique about Mark's Gospel, we heard last week the story of John the Baptist being beheaded. In Matthew's Gospel, Matthew and Mark share a lot of the same way of telling the story. But in Matthew's Gospel, when we get the story of the beheading of John the Baptist, it's a setup to Jesus needing some time to grieve. In Matthew, he hears his cousin has been beheaded and he needs to go off to a quiet place. In Mark's Gospel, it's different. Mark's Gospel will get the story in the same place, but it's framed differently. And it's framed as evidence that crazy, almost superhuman work that Jesus has sent them out to do is actually working. They go out into these towns, and demons are fleeing, and the sick are being healed, and the stories are spreading everywhere, and King Herod hears in the palace what's going on, and he's afraid. And the reason he's afraid is he sees this tidal wave of God's kingdom breaking over, and he thinks, John the Baptist, whom I beheaded, is probably coming back from the dead, and I better run. And then Mark's Gospel tells us the story of, oh, and by the way, didn't tell you, but here's how and why King Herod beheaded John the Baptist. But you see, the story becomes, in Mark's Gospel, evidence that something is happening out there, and even the king hears about it in his prayer. When the disciples come back to Jesus then, there's this, I mean, the I don't know if you caught it in what Demery read, but you can feel this excitement, you can feel the surprise, and you can also feel like the chaos of this scene. When they come back, the apostles gathered around Jesus. So they've been out. Here they come back. The apostles gathered around Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. He said to them, come away to a deserted place all by yourselves and rest a while. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. The scene here is not like a peaceful, here come the 12 all lined up and they stand around Jesus and they all take turns telling him what happened. It's more like, here come a couple And they're going to say, you wouldn't believe what happened, you wouldn't believe what happened. But here's a crowd behind them saying, oh wait, there's another healing. I've got to run back. Let me do this real quick, and then I'll come back and tell you. And then here come three more. And this is a frenetic scene. They're obviously scurrying about and running back and forth. And there's crowds that are already coming together and they're on the door. And Jesus says, let's go off. Y'all need some food. This is sort of Jesus as Jewish mother here. Have you eaten? You know, can we at least take care of that? Jesus is caring for them in the midst of this almost ridiculously impossible work that he's called them to do that is somehow happening. The kingdom of God is breaking on the land. They have become a part of that. It's overwhelming, and Jesus is caring for them. Jesus is saying, let's come away. Let's come away to the deserted place. They are sent. They are cared for. And the third thing that Mark's gospel has to teach us about those disciples is that they find that there's enough. They have enough. Our lectionary makes a jump over two stories in the middle of Mark chapter 6. One of them we're going to pick up in John's gospel. We're going to pick up the feeding of the 5,000 in John's gospel next week. Jesus, the feeding of the 5,000 in John's gospel is the beginning of what we sometimes call the bread of life discourses. So it becomes this metaphor for what Jesus is teaching about being the bread of life. So I don't want to give it away. That's coming next week. A lot of people get to eat. It's pretty exciting. But I do want to pick up on how it functions in Mark's gospel, because I think it gives a key to how this what's going on in all of this chapter 6. They come away to this quiet place. They haven't eaten. But not only now are they tracked by all those crowds that are following Jesus, they're tracked by all those crowds that are now following the disciples when they went from town to town. So now the crowd has grown exponentially, you know, at least times 12. And they're all gathering together, and they all spot Jesus and the disciples getting in the boat and going away to a quiet, deserted place so they can find food, and they all go and they beat them there. So when they get off in their quiet, deserted place, there is a crowd of probably like 10 to 12,000 people who have gathered there. One of the Gospels says it's 5,000, but that's only counting them in. So there's a lot more. And they're all there. It's no longer a quiet, deserted place. Jesus has compassion. Mark uses one of the most fantastic verbs in his Gospel here when he says Jesus has compassion. Explanchthonoi, which is it kind of means how it sounds when you say it. Your insides move when you say explanchthonoi over the head. Explanchthonoi, you feel that? It's this verb that kind of means his guts move, like his insides blow up. Like Jesus is moved with compassion. It's the best that we can do in English. But that's what happens. Jesus gets off the boat and his insides churn. He sees these people and the compassion just sort of explodes out of them. And he gathers them around. And, you know, at this point, the role of Jewish mother switches to the disciples, because after this has been going on for a while, they come to Jesus and be like, okay, it's probably time for them to go, and nobody has eaten them now. Not only are we still hungry, but they haven't eaten. And Jesus, this is when Jesus says, well, how much have you got? So I never can read this story without remembering my grandfather, who was an avid player of a game called Rook. Anybody know the game called Rook? It's kind of somewhere between the euchre and bridge. It's about sort of trump cards that then you catch tricks with in your department. My grandpa was an amazing player of this game, and mostly the way that he played was he got in the head of his opponent when he would play. And one of the things, like in bridge, when you decide that you want to take the lead, all the pressure is on you to make this thing work. You've got to figure out how to play in just the right way. You've got to figure out how to use your trump cards, you know, and you've got to figure out how to gather your cards as much as you can. There are 11 trump cards. Usually they're spread around, and this is the thing that makes you most nervous when you're taking the lead. I've got to figure out what the trump cards are. And my grandfather had this little liturgy of card playing. So that there were certain times when you knew Grandpa's going to say the thing that he always says at this point, to probably try to get in the head of the person he's playing against. After that first round, when you're in the lead, you try to get a trump card out of everybody's hands so you can figure out where they are. And then they come in and you have to do some quick math and figure out where the rest of those trump cards, because that's what's going to make or break this hand. I've got to figure out where those trump cards are. There are 11 cards. My grandfather inevitably, at the first person, his opponent had played them, maybe they, four of them had come in, and he would quickly say, 4 and 7 is 11. If you got 7, you got them all. Of course, there's very little chance that the person's holding all the other 7 trump cards. So really, that would mean to say, you don't know where those cards are, do you? You're in trouble. You're not going to make a stand. 4 and 7 is 11. If you got 7, you got them all. Now think about this when I hear this. Because what happens, of course, in the feeding of the 5,000 is they say, well, we've got, you know, like 5 loaves and 2 fish. That's what we got. And here's this crowd of 12,000 people, not to mention, 12 hungry disciples, exhausted, hungry disciples. And this is when Jesus says, we'll pass it out. And it's this sense of, we don't have much. We got like a handful here. It makes me wonder like what the plan was at the beginning. Like when Jesus said, let's go away to a deserted place. I know you haven't eaten. Was it still just that tiny little handful? I mean, if that had been a miracle, that would have been much generous. It probably wouldn't have agreed to it. But the feeding of 12. Feeding the 5,000 is much more exciting, but what was the plan from the beginning? But what they learn is 5 and 2, 7, and if you have 7, you have enough. If you've got the resources, if you've got the meager resources in front of you, in fact, that will be enough. The story then goes on to the disciples going out in the boat, and this is the walking on the water scene. And the disciples are terrified. There's a fascinating verse in that story. When Jesus gets out to the boat, he finds that the disciples are terrified of the storm and of the wind and the waves. The verse says, because they had not understood about the loaves. It doesn't give us any more explanation. They haven't understood about the loaves. And I think understanding about the loaves is the whole thing in chapter 6. They are sent out to do more than they can handle. And the world is not going to seem to let them do the work that they have done. There will be wind, and there will be waves, and there will be hunger, and there will be things called from them that they feel that they don't have the resources to accomplish. And Jesus is saying, what have you got? 5 loaves, 2 fish. If you've got that, you've got enough. They hadn't understood about the loaves. They go back, they land on the shore, and that's where we pick it up with the lectionary again, where they go off, the kingdom goes on walking through the towns that Jesus and the disciples get to follow along, and people are even reaching for the hem of his robe, and everyone who touches him is healed. The work continues, the work carries on, and there's still that image there, grasping of the hem of his garment. They don't even catch much of him. Like, they might be going for a full body tackle, but only it's a little hem of his robe, and that's enough. This tiny little bit is enough, and it's the same pain that we get. The kingdom of God is breaking on this place. And it's more than we can do, and it's more than we can manage. But we are cared for by Christ. And a little bit that we have is enough. And this is the teaching of Mark's gospel. And it's a teaching for us today too. So those are the questions that I would like us to think about. What is it that you are sent to do? What is it that we as a community are sent to do? We can think about this personally. What is the work that God has called us to do? Is it your family? Is it the job that you do? Is it the friendships that you hold? I think it's all of these things. What is the work that we're called to do together? Is it, for instance, what is the work that you're called to do among us in this place? Is it, for instance, to serve compassionately with the homeless ministry, the homeless collection collective that we have begun a relationship with? Listening for ways that we can not only be compassionate, but we can work for justice for homeless people in this community through our Austin Interfaith interactions? What is the work that you're being called to do? You'll know, like the disciples, you'll know that it's the work that God has called you to if it's more than you can handle. That's how you know that you're part of the kingdom that's breaking on the place. It's going to be bigger than you. It's going to be more than you can handle. But then the question is, what are the ways that God is caring for you in the midst of this? Notice these. I have a former spiritual director of mine who used to say, be part of this exciting work, but
also let God show you your peace. Let God bring you to a peaceful place. What are the ways in which you're being called to eat? Well, come away, take a breath, give yourself to this work in a way you can experience that there is, in fact, enough. And then finally, what's the little that you have? What's the little resources that you have? They're not enough, but bring them out. Take a look at them. Count them. Probably around 7 of them. 5 and 2, 7. And if you've got 7, you've got enough. This is what I think Martin has for us this morning. He's got this image of followers of Christ that we're invited to find is shaping our own lives. We are those who are sent. We are those who are comforted. And we are those who, whatever resources we can pull together, will miraculously find, will learn about the loaves, and we can understand about the loaves, will miraculously find that whatever we can pull together is going to be enough.